Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Leah Gilmore.
And we welcome you here to our monthly visit from Leah Gilmore.
Yeah, this is twice a month.
Twice a month?
Yeah, can you believe that?
That's good.
Yeah, I'm not in some country.
In the United States?
I'm in the United States.
Before we jump into this, let me give you our day in history. This is August the 29th. Yes. On this day in history, a number of births and deaths took place and special events. On this day in history, Jonathan Locke, one of the great philosophers and writers, was born in 1632. This is a day when one of the most important sociologists and thinkers in America was born. E. Franklin Frazier was born on this day in 1894. This was also the day that Ingrid Bergman was born in 1915 and died on this day at only 67. Of course, she played Joan of Arc in Spellbound, Notorious. She played in Casablanca with Humphrey Bogart, one of the world's great actors. This is a day in 1920, and we'll be hearing his music during the course of the next couple of hours during our breaks. Charlie Bird Parker was born in Kansas City in 1920 on this day. So Richard Attenborough was born on this day, an English actor, director, producer, who made the film Gandhi and did many nature films as well. Dinah Washington was born on this day in 1924.
There you go.
1936, Senator John McCain was born.
And there you go.
And there you go. And Temple Grandin was born on this day in 1947, who's been on the show several times. Amazing human being. And on this day, Michael Jackson was born in 1958. Mm. And on this day in 1533, the 300-year Inca civilization came to an end when Atahualpa, the 13th emperor of the Incas, was strangled at the hands of Pizarro's Spanish conquistadores, and the ending of the Inca freedom in this hemisphere on this day in 1533. Now we'll run through some of these events that took place. 1786, there was the Shays Rebellion in Springfield, Massachusetts. Also, there was several years later, what I think is even more important in some ways, 1793 was the day that slaves freed the colony of Santo Domingo from the French, became the first black republic in the world. This was a day when, in 1833, that Britain abolished slavery. This is a day in 1844, the first white Indian lacrosse game took place in Montreal, and the Indians won. This is the day in 1896. Now, we all think of this food. Since we have so much fancy food today, we don't think about this too much. We all think of chop suey as Chinese. No, it's an American food. It was first made in 1896 by the chef of the visiting Chinese ambassador. Combining American and Chinese ingredients created chop suey, which became America's Chinese food. This is the day in 1911 that Ishii, who was the last member of the Yaqui, the last surviving member of his people, came out. Passed away, and he came out of the woods. He'd been in there for 49 years, living alone after his people were wiped out, stayed in the mountains, became a showcase, but then became a celebrity. A very famous story that we've covered here before from Oroville, California. This was also the day that the United States in 1916 passed the Jones Act, allegedly passing Philippines independence, which was really a joke until 1946. It really didn't happen. This is the day that 1953, things escalated.
Sounds like real.
Russia exploded the first hydrogen bomb on this day, their hydrogen bomb. This is a day when Strom Thurmond ended his 24-hour filibuster against the Civil Rights Bill that was passed in 1957, which was the first federal civil rights legislation since the 19th century. This is in 1875, almost to the day, a bill was established to set up a civil rights commission and civil rights division in the Justice Department to take on voting rights, which did nothing because the end of Reconstruction happened shortly thereafter. This day in 1970, there was a pitch battle between the police who attacked the Black Panther Party in Philadelphia, where one policeman was killed and six were wounded in a battle between police and the Black Panther Party in Philadelphia in 1970. It became a very famous case. This was the day that the first black-owned network in the world, the Mutual Black Network, was purchased by Sheridan Corporation. And on this day, we have to remember, we're not doing a show today, but we should talk about a bit tomorrow in our National Roundtable, that Hurricane Katrina, the Category 5 storm, hit with 145-mile winds and 175-mile winds, hitting New Orleans on this day in 2005. And speaking of Michael Jackson's birthday, this was a day that after an autopsy in the Los Angeles coroner's office in 2009 ruled that Michael Jackson's death was a homicide. That is this day in history, at least part of this day in history.
It was August a very eventful day.
Every day seems to be an
yes,
eventful day.
Yes, it does,
so.
You know.
Now we're going to turn. Leah came up with this wonderful idea today.
Oh, great. You're turning to me. That's wonderful. Well, let me tell you. I am a Morganite and a very proud one and a veteran of the vocal program here as well as classical piano here. I studied with Dr. Kelly and Dominique DeLerma, people before you were even born, Dominique DeLerma and Dr. Lampley and Betty Ridgway, amazing, amazing people. And Mr. Comerges was just here with Daphne talking about her book, Black Pearls.
Really?
And we were talking about you. Talk about you so much, Vincent. This is Vincent Stringer, who is running one of the most amazing opera programs, HBCU, and just beyond any school. And I had the fortunate opportunity of taking some middle school kids to see your production of Porgy and Bess. And I was blown away, and the children were blown away, and I see something very, very familiar, you know. It was just absolutely wonderful, and I was so proud to be a Morganite and so proud of the work you have been doing. So let's just start off by asking, where did this idea come from?
Let's see. When I was brought here, there was a small opera workshop that was run by a wonderful woman by the name of Marilyn Thompson. Mm. And in that class, they got an average of about 5 students per semester. And so they brought me here to establish an opera workshop. And I started doing fully staged productions. And I started drawing people into the program. So in 2004 is when we started really sort of changing the trajectory of the opera, the idea of opera at Morgan. And so the desire that I had always as a result of having the benefit of living in Europe, working in Europe, performing on the great stages of the world, to bring the experience that I had back to the historically black college and provide African-American students with that kind of opportunity. So.
And rarely do they get that opportunity. You've brought some guests with you.
Yes.
And we'd love to introduce them.
Yeah, we have with us in the studio talking about Morgan and opera. Yeah. We have in the studio with us Dwight R.B. Cook, well-known by many, production manager for the Murphy Fine Arts Center here at Morgan State University, director of the Douglas Moore's The Devil and Daniel Webster, which will be produced for the 2013-2014 season of opera here at Morgan State University.
Mm, awesome.
Anthony Marsicano is with us, a tenor here in the Morgan State University Opera Workshop. Dimery Mowry. I have your name right, Donna Dimery? Good. Soprano at the Morgan State University Opera Workshop, and the newest member of our faculty here at Morgan State University in opera, Joanna Ford. Welcome all to the studio.
Thank you.
It's so glad to have you here. Awesome. So what's it like, Anthony? I just want to say Anthony Marciano.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so, I just want to do that. You know, we have to roll the R's.
Yeah. Okay. But a tenor, not a boxer.
There you go. Okay. He's a lover, not a fighter.
That's right.
That's right. The tenor gets all those great roles. What has this experience been like for you as a are you an undergrad?
I am an undergraduate.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is such an amazing experience for an undergraduate student because usually you don't get this type of instruction until you get into graduate school. What has it been like for you?
Well, first, I keep saying see because I just spent a whole month in Italy. So forgive me if I keep saying see. I can tell you that this experience for me has been a fantastic one so far. We have an incredible program here at Morgan State University, and it's run by a lot of great professionals here. So for me, when I first started in opera, I've only been singing opera probably, like this is probably going into my 4th year now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've learned so much, and I've been afforded with many opportunities under Mr. Stringer, who's my vocal teacher.
Oh, wonderful.
And my very, very first opera was in Porgy and Bess.
Yes.
In the spring of 2012, and I was cast as in a dual role. So I played the role of Crabman, and I also played the role as Robbins. the guy who got killed.
Oh, then I heard. So I know Robbins. I know Porgy and Bess.
So it's just, you know, been fantastic so far, right. And I can't explain how many, or even begin to articulate how many opportunities I've just been afforded, you know, just from being here. Like I said, Porgy and Bess was my first opera, mm-hmm. and then Sandman
In the Hansel and Gretel.
Hansel and Gretel, yes. Yeah.
Wonderful.
And I had the chance to sing in the Aida chorus with Maryland.
Annapolis Opera.
Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, I just went to Italy, mm-hmm. and studied there for 5 weeks, which was a very, very intensive program.
Tell them the role that you sang.
I sang Normanno in Lucia di Lammermoor.
I know it, yeah.
So right. It was very
That's
very
not
incredible.
Easy.
No.
My goodness. No. You're doing the big time opera.
Yeah. Right. So it's been great. It's been great.
So Dwight, I'm really glad you came to the studio today. Your reputation precedes you.
I'm telling you, Dwight, it's true.
Good to have you here.
It's true. I'm so glad to see you, too.
But talk a bit about this season coming up and your direction of the mm-hmm. Devlin Daniel Webster.
Well, I'm being invited by Vincent Stringer to direct one of the operas. First time directing an opera. I've directed.
First time?
Yes, an opera. Yeah, I've directed a lot of theatrical productions.
Of course, we know.
And Vincent and I were talking about, you know, one act operas to be in the Gilliam, which is wonderful. And I said, well, you know, I played Scratch in the Devlin Daniel Webster when I was in college years ago. And I said, I'd be nice to revisit that. And he said, well, let's go for it. And with the Swangelica, mm-hmm. you know, with the coupling of those two operas, you know, our theme is what would you do to save your soul?
Well, mm-hmm. you know, what would you do
right.
exchange.
Mm-hmm. to exchange mm-hmm. for your soul, you know? And so I'm excited, looking forward to it.
So what's different about directing for you? This is your first opera, directing mm-hmm. a stage production that may have music or not have music in it, and directing an opera, which is a very different animal, really, to kind of put together.
Well, technically, the difference really is the staging part of it. I've directed musicals, you know, I've directed theater, so it's all the same. But opera singers have to sing.
Right.
Right.
And because of the way the scores are written, the way it's presented, you have to be cognizant of what they have to do physically in order to portray a character, as well as trying to sing the diaphragm and all of that, you know, and then also not losing the theatricality.
That's very tough. It's a tough task.
It is a tough task. Yeah. I think I chickened out of it. You know,
but staging acting in an opera is a really
Very different world.
It's a very different world.
You know, yeah. And and Demery, you came here as a student, right?
Yes.
Right. I'm sorry. Okay. And were you not best, young lady?
I was best.
Yeah, you were very good.
Thank you.
You were very good. I really, really. Are you still in school?
Absolutely.
Okay. And this is your what year?
This is my fourth year here at Morgan.
Fourth year.
Yes.
Okay. Well, definitely a font of talent. Right. But did you know before you came to Morgan and with the Opera Theater, did you know that this was the direction you were going to take? What has this done for you, and what do you see in the future for you? And how did this prepare you?
Well, I did know that I wanted a career in an opera performance. I actually mm-hmm. transferred from a conservatory here. Mm-hmm. I went to New England Conservatory, and I transferred here. Morgan has afforded me so many amazing opportunities, and I definitely see myself pursuing an international opera career. Eventually, that's what I would love to do.
Right, I definitely see it too. Yeah, I'm a visionary.
All right,
right. It was great listening to Dwight talk so specifically about staging of operas, because it's a different world. I mean, you have to be very cognizant of, you know, diaphragmatic and you know, projection, and the acting's so important. Yeah. You know, through the whole thing. I mean, that's why I think opera singers, I like to talk about opera in the African-American community mm-hmm, mm-hmm. because it's not something that we talk a lot about.
Right.
And we have some absolutely brilliant opera singers. I would love to hear from our newest faculty here at Morgan. You know, how do we encourage more children who are interested in music to get involved in opera?
I think, first of all, people just need to be exposed to it. So the more we as students, faculty members, black opera singers do work, such as recitals at churches, mm-hmm. And community events. Then with the exposure, people come up to you and say, how do you do that?
Right.
And they get
right.
interested right. in it right. that way. Mm-hmm. Also, just even things like watching public television and seeing the Met broadcasts, stuff like that. It's very important for us as black opera singers to be in the community and just expose and just present our gifts, and that gives people exposure. So I think that's one way to encourage mm-hmm. people just by doing what you do.
Well, how did you decide to move to opera?
It was a very interesting thing. I knew I wanted to be a singer. I was taking voice lessons at the Community College, Essex.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I went to undergrad.
Yeah.
And it was presented like, do you want to do pop or do you want to do musical theater or do you want to do opera? And I was like, And he was like, well, classical transfers. And I knew I wanted
that's
to go
right.
to a four-year college. So I was like, okay, well,
right.
it's going to be
do
classical.
You know, I did the same thing. I went to Essex and then I came to Morgan.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. So that's how I made it. And I knew I had taken voice lessons before, and I did like that sound that I could produce. I'm small, but I have a pretty big voice. So I really enjoyed doing that, and that's kind of what motivated me to do it.
So it was opera. Did opera, as young people, mm-hmm. all of you, even was opera in your repertoire of music that you listened to, thought about, heard, played with when you were young, or did this
Dwight has something to say.
When I was a child. I used to go around my house because I used to listen to, I mean, I think it was QXR at the time from New York. I was raised in Connecticut,
yeah.
New London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on the weekends, the opera would be on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I'd be around the house by myself because I was a boy soprano singing.
Oh,
with, you know, just singing. Yeah. My mother loved jazz, you know, and that meant that had something to do with her emotional moment at that moment. So I left stayed that way. You know, but that's how I got involved, you know, because I said, yes, because I could sing. I was out singing all the ladies in church. And stuff like that.
You know,
I was singing the desk cans and everything in church and stuff like that. You know, and so, I mean, that's how I got, right. you know, hooked into it, you know, and then my father started my violin at four, but that's another story.
Right. Wow. And then your voice changed and you still sang.
Oh, yes. Matter of fact, my first major was music education with voice, and then I changed the theater. My degree's in theater, but that's mm-hmm. where I started off with.
Yeah, my mm-hmm. degree's in political science,
yes.
but I still sing.
Well,
it's so interesting.
And I started, I'm a preacher's kid, and I've told this story several times on WEAA. I'm a preacher's kid. I sang. My sister was the singer. She was 3 years old mm-hmm. singing, and everybody focused their attention on her. It wasn't until I got into middle school when my voice dropped. I was a boy soprano, and I sang in the family group. They put me out of the family group because my voice became a bass overnight.
Mm.
And in gospel music, mm-hmm. music, there is no bass.
Right.
There's
there is
SAT.
No, I tell people that. It's SAT.
Exactly. Right. So then I had this teacher who saw something in me in high school. Her name was Elizabeth Martin. And she exposed us. I was in the Talented and Gifted program. She took mm-hmm. us to opera. I mm-hmm. saw my first opera. I saw Aida when I was in 10th grade. And there was this African-American singer named Robert Honeysucker on the stage at Connecticut Opera with a cast of 1,000 people with this huge pyramid in the middle of the Coliseum and live animals. And I was just completely blown away.
Right.
And I said, wow, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
My seeing this black man
yeah.
on
mm-hmm.
the stage
yeah, exactly.
made me recognize that that's something I could possibly do. And so the exposure, when you see, we need role models in our community.
Yeah. Amen.
Role models where young people can see all of the possibilities and they can see themselves doing what they see you doing on the stage. And so in bringing opera to the community, into the African-American community, bringing groups like we've done Douglas Memorial Church. We took opera there one Sunday, you know, and the young people there were very inspired by that. But bringing opera into the community is important. But you know what? Bringing African-Americans to the stage as directors, bringing them as producers, bringing them as developers, fundraisers, and members of boards is very important, yeah, because until we have presence behind the scenes and we develop constituents out there that are going to make the producers of opera say, okay, now we need to bring some more African Americans onto the stage, it won't happen.
Right.
And that's the really interesting.
Yeah, there's something can be shifting in this 21st century. I'm just, before we go to break here in just a few minutes, I'd like to also share your, I mean, we heard how you got, Joanna?
For me, I was not interested in opera. I had trained, taking piano, classical piano. I studied with Audrey McCallum at New Shiloh School of Music. So I had been exposed to good music because of Nathan Carter and the choir at New Shiloh. And growing up hearing Morgan's choir, like, ooh, that's cool. But it wasn't.
We had the same life. just 30 years apart.
But I was not by any means. I was studying political science and economics at first.
Those are my degrees.
And I was in a hip-hop rock band. And I was rapping and I was belting, and that was fine with me. It wasn't until I went to Essex, I literally just said, I'm going to pick classical because it transfers, not really out of interest. But I saw Denise Graves play Azucena. I said, that's what happened to me. I said, I want to do that. I pointed on the stage. I literally pointed. She acknowledged me, nodded, because, you know, there were a few black dots in the crowd. And I said, yep, that's it. So it's because she just had this dramatic performance. It was so good that I said, okay, I want to do that.
Right. There's nothing like it. I mean, really, I love musical theater, but it is a spectacle. For me. And what did it for me was Jessie Norman. You know, I heard her sing an aria from Dido and Aeneas, and I thought, oh, my God, if I could do that, I could, you know, I made myself do it. But I was the same as you. I sing everything, you know. I was like, Prince was my life. All right. Do you know who he
Purple
is?
Purple Rain.
Everybody knows Prince.
Cross-generationally. But I think that, for me, as a person who is down doing traditional African American music, it was, Vincent and I were talking, it was my classical training that keeps me singing.
Yeah.
You know, it is that technique and the knowledge of where to bring your voice, and if you have a cold, where to take your voice. You know, you are so blessed at what this opportunity to have such teachers as Vincent and now Joanne. And at Morgan State University, this is what I'm so excited about, that we have this opportunity to have this.
So
we'll be talking right after this break.
We're going to go out with something I think would be some important kind of play, and we can talk about it this when we come back. We're going to go out with a piece by Le Chevalier de Saint-Georges, an 18th century African French-African composer, and who was a swordsman and a nobleman and became known in, he was a violin prodigy, who became known in that period as the Black Mozart, was not allowed to take over the Paris Opera because he was told in the 1700s that the other opera singers would not be directed by a mulatto. But believe you,
you can still be told that.
I want to talk about that when we come back.
Right.
And we're gonna listen to some of this. We don't hear this music much. We need to hear it more. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back.
Hi, I'm Leah Gilmore.
And Mark Steiner. And what you just heard was from Porgy and Bess from here at Morgan State University
right.
in 2010. And we're looking at opera here at Morgan State University and in the world, especially the world, how African Americans are affected by and affect this world of opera.
That's
and what
right.
comes out of Morgan State University. We're here with Leah Gilmore, of course, my co-host and dear friend.
And thrilled.
Center for Emerging Media's cultural editor, blues and gospel singer, director of the network of network operations for Moving Maryland Forward Network. Mm-hmm. Vincent Dion Stringer is in the studio, assistant professor of fine arts here at Morgan State University, coordinator of vocal studies at Morgan State University, and artistic director of the opera at Morgan State University.
He's the opera god of
opera
Morgan.
God.
I just gave you a new title.
You're scaring me.
Dwight R.B. Cook is production manager for the Murphy Fine Arts Center here at Morgan and is directing Douglas Moore's The Devil and Daniel Webster.
That's awesome.
As the, which part of the 2013-14 season of opera here at MSU. Anthony Marsicano, tenor here at Morgan State University Opera Workshop. Jimmy Mowry, soprano with a workshop here at Morgan State. And Joanna Ford, faculty member here at Morgan State University, 410-319-8888. Join us here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to Facebook. Or tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. We joke going out at the break here in a humorous way, but the reality
but
was
in a real, reality, very realistic way.
When you first walked into the room earlier this morning, Vincent, I said we're going to touch on the third rail because in the classical music world, the world of African Americans in that classical music world is the third rail.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading all these quotes from people running companies, you know, saying that still kind of shying away from putting African-American singers in lead roles in major operas, the difficulty of breaking through the divide between the white classical world
right.
and the black performer. Mm-hmm. That this is reality.
It is.
It might be This may be a 21st century breakthrough in some ways, given what the history was. Should we talk about that for a sec?
It's been a constant struggle in the world, and it still is. Fortunately, at the Met right now, we have a very fabulous tenor, Lawrence Brownlee, who's breaking those boundaries as a tenor, African-American tenor in leading roles opposite of white women. That's been the struggle.
Talk about that.
You know,
yeah, that really. Many dynamics going on.
There's a whole lot of dynamics in that you know people aren't accustomed to that. There's a discomfort level, and when you've got people behind the scenes who make the decisions, calling the shots, and they're influencing what the director can do, saying,
right.
"Well, you can't hire that person. You can't put that person with that person." That still goes on. And that's the challenge that we face every day until we have more African-American presence in those places behind the scenes helping to make decisions. And we have more African-Americans in the audience because that's what it's going to take
right.
as well.
Right.
My agent said to me many years ago, you know, when I wanted to do recital work and I wanted him to send me on a concert tour of recitals in the United States, he says, like, well, who would your constituents be if I sent you to Kansas? He says, you know, I could send you to Kansas, but who would I call to say this African-American baritone is coming to Kansas in, you know, Springfield, Kansas? And who would your audience be? If you were Italian, I could call the Sons of Italy.
Right.
If you were Jewish, I can call the synagogue, and there would be a whole bunch of people that would populate the place. He said, but until that changes, there's going to be a challenge getting you out there and people like you.
I'm curious how the younger part of this crowd feels about your futures and where you want to take them.
Mm.
Well, I know for me, I've never studied opera and classical until 4 years ago because I like a couple of
yeah, 4 years ago, you may have been 12 or something.
I wanted to do gospel, so I've been singing all my life, and you know I've had voice teachers for a good majority of my life, but until 4 years ago, I was singing like all gospel, and it was so incorrect. Well, I can say now, being a trained singer, I know the difference now between the correct way of singing and the incorrect way of singing, because I've tried to sing like I used to sing before, and number one, it hurts.
Exactly.
It's just really uncomfortable. So I know for me, I like what I'm doing now. And again, I've been afforded so many opportunities, like I just don't want to stop, you know. So I would encourage any younger people that are probably listening to this station right now to just don't limit yourselves and just, you know, think outside the box and just pursue it if you like. Just pursue it and go, because there are people out there that are willing to help you.
Demaree.
Well, I think that my future in this industry related to the racial barrier, I believe it'll probably change because the world is changing. And I feel like since there is more of a population of African-American opera performers nowadays, I feel like it just has to be a breakthrough. You know, look at the way our country is now. Like,
right.
We've come a long
way.
And the timbre and the glory of the African American voice, like, people cannot just continue to refuse it.
Exactly.
You know, I actually had a friend. He told me that one of the directors in one of the major opera companies, she's new, and she told him that if she could hire an entire African American cast, she would, because she loves our voice. But, you know, like Mr. Stringer said, you know, there are people behind the scenes who won't allow that to happen.
Right.
So I feel like I'm honestly not concerned about it. I'm really not concerned about the racial thing. Like I said, I want to be international, and it's definitely different international than it is national.
I can tell you so much it is.
Yeah,
right.
You can right. see, like, right. a lot of, you know, I feel like the African-American opera performer has a glorious career internationally than here, and I'm excited to go overseas.
And a lot of our performers, classical singers here, actually get famous first.
Absolutely.
In Europe.
Absolutely.
You know, there's
right.
so
the
much
tradition.
Appreciated. And it's just not our classical music. It's also
Absolutely.
Our music, period. It is not like there's high music and there's low
right.
music.
Right.
Our
exactly.
music is equitable from the field hands, from the music of the slaves to the music of, you know, to we performing Saint-Saëns or something, you know. I used to do a lot of Schubert Lieder, and I did it there.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like Vincent said, I was like, well, who's going to listen to you do that here?
Right.
You know, but the thing about it here, I think there is a change happening. And I think it's slowly but surely. And I think once we understand and get behind the scenes and start being the decision makers, it even becomes more profound. During that interview, I was actually interviewed by the granddaughter of William Grant Still.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So, and that was pretty profound for me. And then she ended up singing. I sing blues. So this is a classical singer. But she ended up singing an Ethel Waters song on my CD. So this is how our music cross-pollinates.
Right.
But the wonderful thing, this young man said, Matriana, because I want to say that. I just want to keep saying that. Is that I know. Let me be old and ignorant. You know, let me do it. But I think what Vincent and you said was so profoundly correct, that classical allows you the opportunity to sing correctly anything. You know, and that's what is so great about having a classical education. And I think what you're doing here with the opera workshop is really creating such an amazing group of singers that they can't say no anymore.
Yeah.
It's too many. Yeah. It's so much greatness.
We have a young lady that has just graduated from our program who is going to Yale. Started at Yale.
Oh, wonderful.
She starts this week at Yale, doing her master's degree. Leah Hawkins, a mezzo soprano.
Okay.
Listen for
She's
that name.
She's a great first name.
Absolutely. I mean, listen for that name because it's destined for greatness. You know.
So I mean, I think that's actually. Two things I want to kind of pop up here.
Sure.
One is just to make a quick comment, then turn to our other two guests here. Is that this is like a hidden gem that this community doesn't know about, and the city as a whole doesn't realize is here that you know we have Peabody and other institutions right. in town. Mm-hmm. But the idea that this is incredibly powerful opera program
right.
at Morgan State University
needs to be known.
It needs to be known. Mm-hmm. People need mm-hmm. to know this exists here and mm-hmm. that how it can part of the kernel that could change the nature
and it's thriving
of opera in the 21st right. century. I can see it. Were you about Dwight? Go ahead, jump in. I can see it now.
Me too. Dwight was
exactly. There was a movie called Field of Dreams.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I know it was. The catchphrase was "Build it, they will come."
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have the Gilliam Concert Hall, which I think is 98% perfect in acoustics,
mm-hmm.
and
it's a
jewel, a gem. That no one knows about.
Yeah.
For a singer, it's just amazing.
You know, it is amazing. I mean, I'm writing an article right now for Mr. Stringer in mm-hmm. reference to that. But the BSO used to rehearse here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Jesse Norman opened this space here.
Right, I remember.
You know, and this concert hall can rival any concert hall in the country, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and. The thing is, it's a magnet, but no one knows about it.
So, Dwight, what do we do? I mean, what do we do? How can we, as Baltimoreans, as artists, as people like Mark Steiner, with a voice, what should we be doing to let folks know that this is here? Because it is absolutely magnificent.
Vince and I have been talking about this, mm-hmm. and I would say to you, especially alumnus, mm-hmm. you know, of Morgan, especially the artists mm-hmm. who have come through the old Murphy,
yeah.
you know, the new ones, they right. have to be the trumpeters. They have to really announce, you need to come to Morgan. Right. You need to know about this.
Oh, I'm trumpeting.
You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, and we need to, I feel personally, mm-hmm. we need a campaign mm-hmm. talking about the Murphy Fine Arts Center, period.
Mm-hmm.
Alone, but then the Gilliam Concert Hall specifically, you know, the things that we've had all kinds of things come through, but we don't use it as much as it's been built for.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
You know, Dr. Carter had a dream.
Yes, he did.
President
talked about
Richardson
it
at the time, you know, mm-hmm. they had this dream to build this concert hall on HBCU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are, you know, we have 2,036 seats.
It's an amazing.
You know,
space.
How many colleges can you go to
That's
find
huge.
That type of, yeah. of you know?
It is. It's just
know,
really you know. Unprecedented for HBCU.
Mm-hmm. Joanna? It is amazing.
I mm-hmm. was just thinking when you were talking about race and singing, mm-hmm. this is my thought. I'm going back.
That's okay. No, no.
No,
please,
no.
But
always want to talk about that.
But I was just thinking of the movie Aida's Brothers and Sisters. Mm. Shirley Verrett was just talking mm. about, you know, where do you see black people? The question was asked, where do you see black people in opera now? And she said, I don't know. We go in and out in waves.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a wave of extraordinary black singers
mm-hmm.
like Shirley Verrett, like
Leontine
Price, like Grace Prumbry, all coming around at the same time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I guess that would be they're outliers in some ways.
Mm-hmm,
but now I think it's a little different, and it's hard to tell why anybody, I don't care who you are, black, white, it's always hard to tell whether why you didn't get a role or mm. not. It's just mm. a hard field. So until I become as excellent as I want to be or mm-hmm. as excellent as I need to be, I can't blame anything on anything but mm. me. But there's always, we were just talking about this in the car,
mm-hmm.
there's always that question of you don't know. Because it's so, singing is so... People's aesthetics are different.
Right.
That's a beautiful voice. That's not such a beautiful voice. I can say that when I did a recital in Germany, it was one line in a little local newspaper. Black singer come to this church mm-hmm. in Germany. It was filled.
Right. Exactly.
The
right.
house was filled. The church
exactly.
was filled. Over 200 seats. People were standing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different culture here than it is than it is over there.
Mm-hmm.
And as a black singer, if I say I'm a soprano in Germany, people are like, oh, like Jesse Norman, like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The
exactly.
names like
exactly.
this.
Right.
If I tell people here, black, white, I don't care. If I tell people here that I'm an opera singer, they say, you look like an R&B singer.
Right.
You really? How'd right. you get into that? Well, that's so weird. Doesn't it take money to do that? And I've had my Asian friends ask me, well, how did you get into that? Well, how did you get into piano? Like, you know,
it's enculturated. It's not enculturated. Opera is something that is still very Eurocentric, even, I believe,
yeah.
even here, mm-hmm. you know, because I think all of us have gotten the same thing. I think, just a question for all of you, because we can call these names out, like Leontine Price and Denise Graves and Grace Bumbry.
And Marquita Lister, yeah, who's going to be on our faculty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. Because we can call these names out, I think that's an amazing thing. But I also think that it's a slightly unfortunate thing, because that means I can't call out all the great sopranos and mezzos who are white or from other cultures. I mean, but we can get on our one hand, you know, and start calling folks out. Yeah. I think we should strive to be a part of the greatness of this music, you know, because the singer, like you said, young lady, the timbre of the voices, you know, the reach of the voice, you know, there's a gloriousness to it. And race is pervasive. Mm-hmm. And for us to deny it, it will always be the first thing that drops in our head, even in an audition. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, go, even if we just weren't sounding like we should have sounded.
Right.
We'll go, well, I have to think because I was black. I don't know, maybe, you know. And I think that's an unfortunate thing.
Right.
But I have a question for Dwight. I really think a campaign makes a very good, lot of good sense. Mm-hmm. Do you have... are you talking about this, or do you have, you know?
Well,
we would love to help you with it.
Well, Vincent is the director of the opera program. You know? Right. Like I said, we've been talking, and
I'm going to talk Vincent to death very soon. You know,
I look forward to it.
And you know, and we have these operas coming up, two one-act operas.
Right.
So we are talking about a game plan to get that out there in conjunction to talk about Murphy, because it's important to do that, you know.
Right.
But we need angels.
We do.
We need angels and friends of Morgan.
I'm wondering if, in terms of what you were just saying, and there's an email that came in, valerie@steinershow@gmail.com. In the 60s, there was an episode of Bonanza in which a black opera tenor was traveling around the country singing. And the closing line is, bear with me, folks, I'm sorry. Went around the country singing, and it raised issues of race and racism in that particular program around
Bonanza.
Bonanza.
That's something I really thought of.
Right,
so I'm going to go find that episode.
That's really very interesting. I look forward to seeing that.
Really?
I think that when I get home, Valerie, show me that episode. We'll find the episode. It's that Valerie.
Is that Valerie?
but one of the things that... I was thinking about, as I listened to everybody speak here, about what's happening in Morgan and about the world of opera. And I heard you earlier say, Vincent, that, you know, when you first started out, where was your audience? You're going to find an audience in Kansas and Iowa, whatever else. But isn't that the issue, that it's not finding a black audience?
Mm-hmm. It's finding a audience.
It's finding an audience.
It's creating an audience that should be. I mean, there should be... You know, there should be like a synergy between, let's say, in Baltimore, between Morgan State University's opera program and the Baltimore Opera.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Where this becomes part of just a mainstream. It's not an oddity. It's not, a black opera singer?
Right.
You know, it's like that's the part that has to end.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
That is
right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And that's what I was alluding to. Mm-hmm. I mean, it shouldn't just be this special, oh, my God, that black woman or that black man can really sing.
Right.
You know, she's so incredible. Yes. I was recently in Siberia, of all places. Okay, I know.
Was it cold?
Child. It's according to the time of year you go.
Mm-hmm.
But the phenomenal thing about it was, you know, I was the black person. In the whole Siberia.
You were the
best. Paul Robeson let me tell you, he is iconic.
Yes.
In Siberia. Mm-hmm. So the difference was everyone was expecting me to sing. They wanted spirituals.
Right.
They wanted spirituals all over the world.
Yes.
This is what they want to hear. They want to hear spirituals.
Yes.
And I said, oh, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. No, we want spirituals.
Yep.
And, you know, I love spirituals.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about that, that's pretty awesome, because we're talking about songs that came from the fields.
Right.
And that have changed the lives of people around the world.
But you know, it's interesting, Dwight, here.
Yes.
The cultural mindset of America versus international.
Yes. Right,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, like Paul Robeson, yes, he did spiritual, but he spoke...
Political.
It was political. And so the thing is,
crazy.
I mean, I was in the premier production, the Met production of Porgy and Bess in 86.
Wow.
Now, it took them
with
to
Vanessa?
It took them with Grace Brummery and Simonides. You know, it took them to 1986, the Met, to do Porgy and Bess.
Yeah.
Now, that's political. Because financial, Porgy and Bess is one of the highest grossing operas in the world.
Period.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
But they weren't going to allow it at the Met until 86 because the politics of it.
Exactly.
You know, they have no problem at putting up a wonderful voice.
Right.
We'll promote that. But the culture is something that we don't do. And it's a mindset that we had to deal with also, you know, to push it, you know. But we got to change the mindset out there.
Yes. Well, we must deal with it politically as well. Vincent.
I'm sorry.
Oh, who was talking?
Yeah, Dimmer,
I wanted to speak on, well, I don't want to go all the way back, but I wanted to share when we were in Australia this past summer, we after our concert, which was packed out, our final concert in Melbourne, we went to this like nightclub, like the entire group, and they were playing old James Brown, right?
Yeah, that's it.
And I was like, I asked the guy, I said, so... Are they just playing this because we're here? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like,
oh,
and
no.
I say, well, you know, we don't. This is like my grandma's music. Like, we've been listening to this. And he's like, well, I mean, you know, we don't listen to, we don't really listen to like what is black music back in here. And so what I did, I went on the stage because there was like you know, a piano and drums, and we had Chester Burke who's studying at Peabody.
Yeah.
And I said, look, we're just gonna sing. So I called everybody out, and they were so fatuated with us because one guy, he said, we don't ever see black singers. Like, we hear it, but we've never seen people sing this in real life. And they were like, they loved every bit of it. Right. They didn't want us to leave. They kept buying everybody drinks.
I don't know if you have a lot behind the scenes, my dear, because that's a very powerful thing that you did. Mm-hmm. That's a very powerful thing.
Yeah, and everybody was loving it, and I kind of like hosted it. I felt good afterwards.
But you know what? In my experiences, I find the ubiquitousness. It is like, but I made up that word in part of it. You know, it's what I do. But it is ubiquitous. Our music. When I turn on the radio, if you're in France, I know you've had this experience of traveling, and the Netherlands or the UK. What you hear, black singers.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's what you hear. You know, you hear our popular music.
Yeah.
And I always think, because we do traditional music for political reasons. I'm very political. That's what we do. And I always think, you know, don't you have your own music?
Yeah.
Right.
And your own singers and your own stars and your own this. Who you hear is, you hear us.
Yeah.
And you hear us from the 50s to the now.
Yeah.
You know?
We influence culture all
over the world. Right. And we should be very proud of it. When I brought the kids here to hear you, one of the middle school students especially looked at you and said, if she can do that, I can do that too.
That's the experience.
These are kids who are underserved. Now, see what influence you have. These are kids who are from very challenging circumstances. Mm-hmm. But they sat there looking at Porgy and Bess. No one would believe that they would want to go to an opera in the first place. They sat there entranced and wanted to talk about it and talk about it and talk about that me no sporting life.
Oh, yeah.
Then they say, Miss Leah, why does he have all the good songs?
Okay. Right. He's a tenore.
There we go.
Exactly.
But what it did was inspire them to say, she said, I can do that.
Absolutely. After I think that was Thursday, our first show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like these little boys, like they had to be between like 6 and maybe 10. And they came up with this older guy. I guess it was their mentor. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, they wanted to take pictures. And they were so excited to meet me. And I that was my first grand production, okay? And
huge.
I worked that. I learned so much. But I'm so thankful for the experience that I've got. I'm actually happy that was my first grand production because I honestly felt like, you know, if I wanted to be depressed and actually, you know, be dramatic, I could have, like, really crumbled throughout the production, putting it together. Mm-hmm. But I stayed strong, and I'm so happy I learned the role. I'm so happy I was afforded the opportunity to learn the role. And I'm so happy that I got to share it with those young children in the audience, because I knew that on Thursday it was kind of like full of schools, mm-hmm. and I had so much fun.
We're just about out of time.
Ah, yes.
Oh,
no, we like to talk.
So I'd just like you to kind of wrap up for us. Mm-hmm.
Well,
where this future is taking us here?
Well, the future is taking us this semester we have 6 master classes. We have wonderful artists coming in. We have Angela Brown coming to do a master class. Evelyn Simpson Currington will be with us on September 26th. We have John Ayler who will be coming to us, wonderful with French repertoire and oratorio. Mm-hmm. We have another alum, Izakiah Savage, who's coming to us in the spring. And then we have Marcia Porter, who's a Fulbright scholar. She's coming here. And Julie Foster, coming from Oakwood University. Mm-hmm. So that's our year in vocal studies in terms of master classes. Our opera production, well, actually coming this Saturday, we are going to be doing our annual performance with the Mid-Atlantic Symphony Orchestra at Freeman Stage at Bayside in Delaware. And on that program, we will have excerpts from La Boheme. We will have excerpts from On the Town of Bernstein. And then we will also do the 4th movement of the Beethoven Symphony, Ninth Symphony.
Well, this is, first of all, this has been a great hour.
Yes, just so exciting.
I'm going to thank you all for coming here.
Thank you.
I want to thank you as well. I'm just thrilled.
And Vincent Dion Stringer, Dwight R.B. Cook, Anthony Marsicano.
Yeah, I'm going to say it right. Marsicano.
Jimmy Mowry and Joanna Ford. Good to have you all here in the studio with us.
Just good luck and, you know, many blessings. And if there's anything we can ever do,
thank you.
You know, we are definitely there.
Thank you, Leah.
Love you, Mark.
Good to have you, baby.
Yeah. Always great to be here.
This is a great hour.
It was a great hour.
And we're going to go out again with an aria from Ernestine, which is an opera by Chevalier de Saint-Georges. Once again, we'll resurrect him here.
Yes.
Stay tuned. We're going to come back by looking again at yesterday's speeches at the march, but then meet the families of 2 men who were killed in the city, Anthony Anderson and Tyrone West, and talk about the park their families are trying to build. Stay with us. We'll be right back.